wetting his whistle. Eleonora, this Wednesday, your little session. Well, is that that's in the schedule, isn't it? About the results. Yeah, good. Fine. Okay. To try and keep on track, what either Greg or myself will do is 5 minutes before the end of the session, we'll try and indicate that to the speaker. Now that means the end of the session. So if you go right to the end, there won't be much time for questions. Yeah. If you want to make some questions, then finish as soon as you can. Okay.
Thanks, Tom.
Roland, are you ready?
Yep, this might actually be shorter.
Okay, let's...
On time.
Let's begin. Right. Just a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
Where are you from?
Yeah, hi everyone, I'm Roland. I'm from the Lucerne University of Applied Sciences and Arts. I work together with Lars Gorder, which some of you may know, in daylighting. My particular job is the software development. Oops. And I also maintain the code for the Radiance photon mapping add-on, which we're using here. This is a work I've been doing for a little over a year now in a disjunct project, which has more to do with photovoltaics, namely simulating reflections from photovoltaics and visualizing them in the context of their environment. So, the question is, are reflections from photovoltaics a problem to begin with? There's different opinions about that. Specular facades in general are a problem. We have some spectacular cases that many of you know. We've got the walkie-talkie building in London that melted cars in the streets. We have that hotel in Las Vegas with the concave facade, which barbecued its guests in the pool area. And photovoltaic building integrated photovoltaics, that is photovoltaics in the facade or also on the roof, have a tendency, albeit of course most of the sunlight is reflected. These pictures here are actually not photovoltaics. These are actually I took from my balcony in Lucerne from different buildings. I think they're actually windows, but nevertheless, I have had these two incidents of glare in the last couple of weeks, which I thought was quite... illustrative of the problem. So think of that in a very large building facade in an urban environment, which is very densely built, then you can get a status problem. Now, to quantify whether these are problems or not, there are not really that many criteria to decide what is glare and what isn't. There's very few objective criteria in the sense of physical units. There's a few subjective ones that are quite vague. And these are reflected in the building ordinances or the legislation. For example, in the Swiss building ordinance, it literally says that photovoltaics integrated into buildings or mounted on roofs or whatever should be of low reflectance per the state of the art. And that's all it said, really. Which is not really that, you can interpret that any way you want, and that actually happens in the legislation. If you look at some of the court cases that were settled due to legal disputes, neighbourly disputes, also in residential zones, there's one case, a very famous case in Switzerland, where a woman sued her neighbour because she installed a solar collector plant on the roof, from which allegedly she got a cataract or glaucoma. And this has been going, I believe it's still ongoing for 5 or 6 years now, and the legislation clearly can't deal with this because there are no objective criteria now to deal with this. So what there is at the moment are recommended criteria from trade unions and also some government agencies which actually specify physical thresholds in photometric units, but they are just that, recommendations. They are not standards for compliance. So you definitely need urban legislation. It has to be more rigorous to prevent reflections from happening. Our idea in the context of this setting, which is sort of an emerging problem, is to apply the criteria that are out there without evaluating them, without validating them, and commenting on saying this is a good idea, this is a bad criteria, simply to check what is out there and use them to predict glare from the raw simulated data that we have from the photovoltaics. And the idea being, of course, to do all this in the planning phase before before the building, before any photovoltaics have been applied, because remedial measures are, of course, very costly. So this is a table of criteria that are found in the literature for assessing glare from photovoltaics. Most of these are taken from a consortium called SwissSolar, which is a trade union for photovoltaics in Switzerland. They, in turn, adopted many of these from the German state / federal agency for pollution control. And what you notice here also is that there are different criteria for commercial and residential zones. The tolerances tend to be lower for the residential zones. More, shall we say, elastic criteria are the distance to the photovoltaics. Obviously, the closer you are, the more likely you might receive glare. The larger the installation is, again, the higher the potential for glare. These are basically the overriding factors: the luminance reflected from the photovoltaics. That's a classic glare metric. But also complementary to that, the radiance that arises at a receiver. And there are different thresholds recommended for that. So these, the 50 kilocandela per square meter by SwissSolar, respectively 30 watts per square meter, those are theoretical maxima. Those are basically values that they derive from a maximum direct normal irradiance of, I think, 800, 900, depending on elevation. And a theoretical, I think, average reflectance of 4% for a module. So they arrive at this, but this is really just a theoretical value. It's not empirically based. By contrast, we have these 30 kilocandelas per square meter, which were recommended in a case study by Kubiak and Christoph Einer. Yeah. And they said that this is in the setting of an airport, and they took, of course, the ambient reflectance and luminance into account, and said that this is a more realistic threshold. And then there is also, which is very roughly to take the standard daylight efficacy factor, that corresponds to about 17 watts per square meter, which is significantly lower than 30 watts per square meter that SwissSolar recommends. And going even lower than that, the Sandia National Labs published values which were derived from empirical data collected from NASA and the US Air Force in the context of glint and glare, that is short-term glare, as it affects air crews, flight crews, from solar power plants, really large-scale installations. And they concluded that just 10 watts per square meter arriving at the eye can already potentially produce after images. And they actually measured in these experiments how long the recovery time is, which was up to in excess of 10 seconds, actually. So in our analysis, we basically chose these two as extremes to a workflow that we developed to evaluate what glare is. At the end of the day, these are the benchmarks that basically indicate how bad the glare is. That is, the glare duration for any day of the year, sustained, i.e. without interruption, as well as the cumulative annual glare duration for the entire year. And so for me, for example, for the day, they say no more than half an hour, which is a pretty tight tolerance already. If you've got a very large module that the sun moving very fast, even then the glare potential can actually be that could easily be exceeded. But these are just, as I said, recommendations. These are not in any way interpreted to be standardization, and we did not call these into question or validate them. We simply took them as they are, as a first stage of this work. So we developed a workflow based around radiance. I'm not just going to go over this, the key points here. There is a paper out, which I'll cite in the next slide, which gives you a detailed flowchart of how the whole thing works. What we did is an annual simulation of the irradiance on the built environment around the site of investigation to basically show how the glare affects the environment in in its context, and then identify glare as hotspots in the irradiance as an initial indicator of where problems are likely to occur. That does not necessarily mean that it is glare, but as a first pass, rather than positioning viewpoints around it for a luminance analysis, you can simply take that as a first indicator of whether you have a problem in the with the proposed setup or not. And we use radiance photo mapping to simulate the reflections from the PV modules, in our case study a roof, which you'll see in a moment, via one bounce to the environment. So photons that are emitted directly from the PV modules, as if they were coming from the direction of the light of the solar angle, and then deposited on the environment, the surrounding surfaces of the buildings. So what you get is a pre-computed flux transport. There's no inter-reflection going on here because we don't care about that. We really want to see only what comes directly reflected from the photovoltaics. And when we render that as a time series using standard arc and trip, we get what I consider you get a series of two-dimensional HDR images, which I call irradiance maps, and as a whole, as an aggregate, that's a three-dimensional irradiance volume. And we process that in three dimensions, taking into account the temporal dimension as well, to extract the glare in terms of duration. For that, we use a Python script. For that, we have to leave the radiance toolkit because it just becomes too tedious and complicated. And Python offers some very good libraries for that, namely as part of the NumPy, SciPy scientific computing suite. And once we've done that and basically process the raw data, we apply the recommended thresholds to figure out what is glare, where is glare, and do we have a problem in that case, specifically to get the annual, to cumulative annual glare and the daily glare duration. At the end of the day, you want to communicate these results to practitioners, to somebody who's in charge of also making the decision. So the practitioner does the simulation, he shows this stuff to these clients, maybe also to decision making in urban planning, and says, this is probably what the situation is going to be, and they can see at a glance if there's any problems or not, without even understanding the physical units, plus everything, the temporal dimension is then telescoped into one single image, and that makes it very easy to communicate these results. And that was the other key of this idea, to simply come up with a visualization that anyone can intuitively understand. Now, that workflow we demonstrated with an actual case study that our department was approached with. This is a church in Lucerne, Switzerland. That's this thing here with the parish in the front. It's one of those concrete bunker type affairs, postmodern designs, an architectural icon. So these are actually under heritage protection, built in the 60s. It's a Catholic church, would you believe, but a very modern one again. And they wanted to retrofit this roof here with photovoltaics. So what we did is we got samples of the candidate photovoltaic materials as well as the existing roof tile as reference material, because being a heritage protected site, the appearance of the roof should be preserved as much as possible. And then we also obtained a digital terrain model of this entire environment here, these surroundings, and the building itself, of course. From the canton of Lucerne, they have a geo portal system where you can freely download the stuff for a minimal fee, and they get this data from I believe from LIDAR scans. And the workflow, as I said, and the case study itself is published in the paper that we recently sent to buildings, which is open access. And that gives you a pretty detailed, it's a fairly lengthy paper, but it gives a fairly detailed idea of how we went about it. We're just going to look at the results, the key points here. These are the materials that we looked at for the case study. We've got a stark black standard PV module here, which, as you can see, already has a fairly glossy appearance. In the middle here, we've got a satinated PV, which has a, sort of a etched glass look to it, which appears very diffuse. And on the right here, we've got a sample of the current roof tile that's on there, albeit a new sample. The one on there right now, I believe, is actually 50-odd years because it's the original roof. We actually had a weathered sample from that too, but you know, depending on where you measure that, you've got moss or something, BRDS and moss, which you don't care for. And we measured these three samples in your gonophotometer. This is an incidence plot at 30 and 60 degrees. So the standard PV module is this red plot here, that's 30, that's 60. You can see that there are some pronounced peaks, which are obvious in the photographs. This gray plot here, by comparison, is the original roof tile, which is, you know, noticeably more diffused. On the right here, we've got the saturated PV in blue, which compares is very, very similar in behavior and also in appearance to the current roof tile. So simply from preserving the appearance, the saturated PV is already the better candidate here, all other things being equal. Next, we derived data-driven BRDF models using GenBSDF from these measured data, and we ran basically a couple of simulations to get a feel for how these materials behave at different times of day. For in this case, summer mornings, 8:30 a.m. in the top row, and in the evening, 5:30 for the same day. And you can see for the standard PV already that in the mornings there is quite significant reflection going on here. This is looking east-southeast, I believe, and this is the saturnated PV, which has a considerably more duller look, as does the current roof tiles. You can already see that they behave very similarly, again in the evening too. There's not really that much difference, whereas the standard PV looks considerably darker, very stark difference. When we ran the simulation year-round, this is a plan view of the site showing the results, showing the false coloured reflection from the PV roof for the entire year. This is just cumulative wattage for the entire year. This is the church in the middle here. These are the surroundings, which are just basically superimposed with the false coloured image to give you, well, for orientation, to give you some context where the buildings are and which buildings are potentially affected. It doesn't convey any radiometric information. Only what's false coloured here factors into the scale. And this is the indirectly reflected component only. And you can already see that the saturnated PV actually tends to have a more broader reflection distribution, whereas the standard PV here is more focused towards the west here, which is actually a group of trees, which are actually there. And if you look very closely, you see that there's actually a house behind these trees, which is shielded by them. Now, trees are, of course, in real life not opaque. They have foliage. That's something that has to be taken into account here. Having said that, these highlights concentrate in the summer months when these trees bear actually quite dense foliage. But this is the first visualization that you can show and say, okay, this is the distribution, this is how things might look over the entire year. Of course, this is just the raw irradiance data. It doesn't tell you anything about glare yet. We haven't applied any of the metrics. This is a comparison with an initial proposal that was made by a PV planning colleague of ours without simulations. I assume he'd use a solar calculator for this. And he figured that, you know, in this region here in the summer mornings, you would have a bit of glare, which coincides with the superimposed plan view that we just saw here. Again, a bit earlier than that, we have a highlight here as well, and a very minor highlight here in these treetops in midsummer. So this gave us the confidence that we were on the right track and that we could actually supplement the knowledge of a PV planner with this tool. And this is probably the visualization you would want to show a client or a practitioner want to show a client or somebody in the urban planning authority and say, this is the view from the building under consideration. This is a 360-degree, you know, panoramic view from the roof, from the church roof. There's a clipping plane here which actually clips off the building right here. What you see here extending to the south is the parish. And you've got that group of trees in the west here again. Again, brightly lit. And you can, you know, pick out the individual buildings that would potentially be affected. And you can see here that the saturnated PV actually distributes everything more towards the parish itself. So they're basically self-barbecuing themselves. Or so it would appear. Energetically, this is not really that big a deal, because the scale is about, well, it's a bit lower here, about 2,500. Here it's 3,000 watt-hours per square meter. That's not a lot for a year. If you stand in the plain sun, of course, you get an order of magnitude more. But most importantly, you can see the difference in the distribution of these materials. And you can also compare that to a reference material in a relative visualization, in this case relative to the existing roof tile. So anything that is blue, like here, this is basically a ratio of the irradiances of the cannonade material divided by the reference material. Anything that's below one is blue here, so the cannon material reflects less in that direction. Anything that's above one is red, orange, yellow, so clearly the standard PV in this case really concentrates a lot here compared to the existing roof tile. And anything which is basically round about one, where the reflectance of where the irradiance is the same for both materials, is green. And you can see that there's very, very homogeneous distribution for the saturnated PV. So its reflectance behavior is actually very on par with the existing roof tile. Again, making it actually a pretty good replacement, a better replacement than the standard PV. So having said that, you know, this basically is just the raw data, and the question is, how do we apply the criteria, and according to these, do we actually have a problem here? Well, we use the irradiance threshold recommended by Swiss Solar, 30 watts per square meter, as a starter. And what we did here is basically visualize over the course of the year any pixels which are, or basically pixel counts in hours, which are above this threshold. And in both cases, there's not a lot going on here. You can see there's something going on here in the treetops, which is irrelevant for the standard PV. The clear criterion is, of course, that anything over 50 hours per year would be considered a problem. And, you know, we don't have a problem here. If we take Sandia Labs' far more conservative 10 watt per square meter threshold, you wind up with what is probably glare here in these trees for the standard PV. And if you count that in numbers of hours, you're looking at around 100 hours, whereas the threshold or the maximum should not exceed 50 hours per year. So if those trees weren't there, and if that house behind it was really exposed, we would probably have a problem in this case. Again, trees are not opaque in reality, so that has to be factored in. But just by looking at this, a PV planner can say, okay, I can place my viewpoint here, for example, using the brand new Origin command in RView, which I did actually use. I thought it was there all the time. And from that, you can then start a luminance analysis looking back to the church. And in fact, that particular direction, let's go back. Is what you see here. This is looking back from the trees, from that viewpoint. And I believe we are actually in excess of 50 kilocannabis per square meter here. That was the reason why I did these renderings in the first place, and of course also to show how the materials work. So this would probably be the standard course of or the follow-up course of action after this initial phase. So you can complement that with a more traditional luminance analysis. So that was annual glare duration. This is the daily sustained glare duration. This is how long a glare event could last up to for any day of the year. And in this case, again, we've got this these highlights here going on in the trees for the standard PV module, using again 10 watts per square meter. With 30 watts per square meter, again, you don't see anything. And these can be up to 1 hour a day, which, again, is double the half hour recommended by Swiss Solar. One of the things here to note is that here you basically have to figure out how many consecutive frames in the time series are above the threshold. And this is where the spatiotemporal buzzword comes in, and this is where you... Right. So this is, you can get an animated GIF from this also, just a freebie, but we're going to skip this, where you can see the temporal progression over the, in this case, of weeks, how the glare duration develops. That's just eye candy, really. But I'll just quickly go over what the Python script that extracts this glare duration does. If you take this time series of irradiance maps, you can see it's all noisy. This is just basically what's reflected from the PV only. If you threshold that for neighboring, irradiance for neighboring frames, there is no guarantee that there will be any continuity because you've got a fluctuation around the threshold. So basically, you may wind up with zero sustained glare at all. So the idea is to apply this Gaussian blur buzzword with somebody like yesterday, to filter this and make it all blobby and to get rid of the noise so that you have more continuity in neighboring frames. Then you do the thresholding. Basically what you arrive at is a three-dimensional binary matrix. Anything that's above the threshold is one, anything below is zero. And then you have to figure out which pixels in neighboring frames belong together, are adjacent. And for that I used a feature extraction, a feature detection function in SciPy. It's part of the n-dimensional image processing module. This is used, for example, for tracking stuff in video. That's used a lot in the in image processing, computer vision as well. And in this case, what it does is that any pixels which are adjacent in both the temporal dimension as well as within each image are then labeled. They just get a numeric label. Anything else is zero. So all you have to do is basically count these along the temporal dimension and add these up, and then multiply them by the duration of the time steps, and you get the glare duration. Having said that, these are very large matrices. This is all this is treated as one very large 3D matrix. I think in excess of 2 gig or something for a whole day, and that's where Python actually does start to break down in terms of performance. So what have we got from this? A few minutes. So we think that our opinion is that reflections from building integrated photovoltaics can lead to glare, and there is a need to predict these in the future because we've seen some, like the thing in the airport that you guys did. Remedial measures like reorienting PVs are expensive. You want to prevent that from happening in the first place. The visualization that we presented, which shows these the reflected irradiance as well as the resulting glare in the context of the environment of the site under investigation, I think is a very direct way, to intuitive way to communicate these results to the planners, but also the non-experts, i.e. their clients and urban planning authorities. And we apply the recommended thresholds to extract this the glare in terms of glare duration over time, year, as well as for individual, for maximum for a day of the year. But we did not actually evaluate these. So we don't know exactly how accurate what we don't know what this actually means in terms of physiological or individual perception. And the case study that we did here with this church, first of all, it showed the workflow. We saw that it agreed with the prediction that we got earlier from a PV planner. And in particular, with those groups of trees, we felt that, yes, there is a glare there, but it's behind the trees, the house is shielded, so we didn't consider that critical. Having said that, there is definitely a need for more refined assessment criteria. The recommendations we had, they're very elastic. Consequently, the urban legislation that applies this stuff is also a bit elastic in its interpretation. And they have to take into account, for example, subjective evaluation, how people really perceived as these quantities, and also because most of the layer metrics are defined in an interior context rather than exterior context, for example, the ambient luminance is not taken into account. I mean, all of these are expressed as absolute quantities, so contrast is not really taken into account here. But the workflow that we proposed here can act as a test bed for existing case studies to validate new metrics and then really juxtapose them with on-site perception as a starting point. And I'm sure that, for example, urban planning authorities, government agencies would be interested in this work. I've been in contact with the energy authority in Switzerland in particular about further developing this, because at the moment it's a proof of concept, and it is actually, we had that discussion last night, it's a makefile. The whole thing runs under a makefile at the moment, so that has to be polished. Right, thanks very much.
I don't see what's wrong with a makefile, but anyway, questions first.
Well, we had a long discussion in the bar about makefiles.
Tons of questions, but I try to resist it.
I anticipate them. Not that I have an answer.
Well, first a comment. I do not 100% agree with your conclusion that we really need this in future. I hope that we can have PV panels which don't have this problem. Actually, there exists
The saturated
like Alvarino P, where you don't have any problem.
Well, I mean, the saturated one works well.
If you are really in the planning phase in your you fear that you have a problem with reflected glare.
Yeah, you want to avoid it in the first place.
Just buy these panels,
exactly.
And then you don't need to do this.
I mean, I don't know how these two panels that we try, how they actually perform in terms of efficiency. I mean, that's not my department. I don't understand these things.
I was in a call trial like 5 years ago or seven years ago, and I did the same thing as you did. Mm-hmm. So it's but this could be really avoided from the beginning. But I
you
want
published
to
them.
Add another thing at the from your slides, but you were saying that you don't evaluate the metrics you're looking at. It's a bit dangerous, some of them, because they don't, from the physiological point of view, some of them don't make any sense. So if you have, for example, an absolute luminance value, if you don't have a solid angle, it really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
If you have a pen outside with a reflection of the sun, you can have like 10 million candela per square meter. It doesn't cost any glare. It's always the size
matters. Yeah,
so it's really that's a tricky thing. And another thing about the duration, actually they are derived from experiments they did in the northern part of Germany with wind power generators where houses were in
Bruno
close to it,
that,
and where there was a stroboscopic effect when the sun was in the wings of the generator, and then they made surveys, and then they found out that this half an hour per day or this 50 hours per year is the maximum.
I think
extrapolating this to a static thing from PV, I don't think this makes really sense.
But
I totally agree. We need some.
I think, like I said, I mean most. Part of these are derived from theoretical values, they're just back of the envelope. I contacted the guy who wrote this Swiss Solar report, you know, and he basically said, we just did the back of an envelope, well, figuratively, you know, we just figured out a maximum DNI and said, oh, okay, well, this will sort of work out, you know, not taking into account the inclination of the panel, things like that. And that half hour, that half hour metric that he mentioned could very well be derived, because they derived this from the LAI, you know, what was it called, LEMDA?
I know this acronym.
And I suspect they probably derived it. Switzerland may not even have known where that data came from.
Got another?
It's all a bit dodgy.
Everything we do is a bit dodgy.
Yeah, I completely agree with you that we need the components that are there to be, but how are we going to assess if a new technology could prevent glare if we don't have a methodology to evaluate glare in the environment already? So, for example, albino P establishes the light in a certain solid angle. How do we know if that's enough for a certain situation after a certain time without a methodology like that?
No, no, I agree with that, but what I wanted to say is that we hopefully don't need this in a planning process. I agree we need this for the development of better surfaces.
It should be prevented from that.
I totally agree. But it's really hard to get funding for that because we tried several times, and I know you guys also tried, and you guys also tried.
Tell me about it.
There's a fine line between a question and a discussion. One more.
Yeah, so you might be able to replace different TV models with like more match ones, but in an urban scale, you have like sloped place, and that is as much as a problem, if not more. And that you can't just, talk away and replace it.
I mean,
glazing has always at least 10% reflectance.
And
if there's any slope on a building, it will become a problem. We're dealing with these things on a very regular basis. And that's just nothing. You can do calculations by the end of the day, predict it.
It's good to simply show the potential problems visually.
Mainly just the sun. The problematic thing is here that we have this so-called anti-reflective coating which broadens the sunbeam up, and that's why you have a larger area, which is similar to the network.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, we move on to our next presentation.